Hello and welcome to Back Chat, your podcast all about scoliosis, yoga and back care. My name is Christine Jaregi-Berry. I'm a yoga teacher, creator of the Yoga Berry Yoga for Scoliosis community and YouTube channel, and this show is all about supporting you on your scoliosis journey. So if you're looking for practical advice and inspiration on how to manage the condition with yoga and movement, then you're in the right place. Hello, everyone. We are live. For us here in the UK, and it's back chat time, which is one of my favorite things to do in the week. Just talking to you guys and then chatting with other people, obviously, as well, that know things about scoliosis. And that's really why we're here. And that's why we're kind of together in this little community. So before we get started with our very, very exciting guest today, I just wanted to mention a couple of things. First of all, big, big news. I finally managed, with the help of my assistant, to put this thing onto a podcast app. So you should be able to find the Back Chat now on your favorite podcast app. It's called Back Chat with Christine. So find it there, subscribe, please. And if you do like it, I would really, really appreciate a review. That's really, really going to help me out and help me to create more content as well. You can also find it on Spotify now. So you've got plenty of options now to listen to it. Today, there will be some visuals as well. So those of you, if you are just listening, maybe there will be some things that you might want to go back into afterwards, as we do have some slides as well, and some things that hopefully make it a little bit more clearer and a little bit more interesting as well. So that was one of the things that I wanted to mention. So excited. This has been, yes, a big project of mine, and finally it's done. So I'm really, really happy about this. The other thing I wanted to mention is that I've got a workshop coming up for yoga teachers. So those of you who are yoga teachers and who want to learn a little bit more, it's kind of an introductory 3 hours workshop about teaching yoga for those that have scoliosis, what you have to be aware of, kind of the do's and don'ts and all of that. So I hope you can join me for that 20th of April, and it's on Zoom. So it doesn't matter whereabouts you are in the world, you can join us for this workshop. So these are a couple of things I wanted to mention. Now, if you are here live, I know there's a few of you joining us live right now, feel free to come and say hello. There will be so much interesting, amazing information from my guest, which I'm going to introduce in a moment. So feel free to ask your questions. I can't promise that I will be able to kind of get them to her as we go all the time, because sometimes it can get quite a lot, but I will promise that we will have some time to cover them, hopefully towards the end, if I've missed anything. And otherwise, I'm sure there will be opportunities as well to get in touch with Meredith. So I mentioned her name already. Her name is Meredith Stevens. She is a very, very impressive lady. She's a PT. She's a Schroth Barcelona therapist. She is a Pilates instructor. And she is a certified anatomy trainer as well. So she's got plenty of experience, knowledge. She's an amazing presenter. So I actually came across her while watching one of the Tom Myers anatomy trains webinars that were happening over Christmas. And she had one of those and talking about scoliosis. So I was so impressed with her that I really wanted to have her on the show. So I'm going to bring her up here. There we are. Hi, Meredith. Thank you so much for your time. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Brilliant.
Yeah, yeah.
Good. So whereabouts are you at the moment? Tell us where you are.
I am in New Hampshire, US. So that is in the northeast corner. So it's very cold and snowy, although today feels almost like spring. Things are melting. So it's coming. It's coming. So I'm 5 hours behind you.
Okay. Yeah. Lovely. Lovely. Amazing. Good. So tell us, so for those maybe who are not so familiar with Tom Meyer's work and the anatomy trains and all of this, I'm just quite curious if you can kind of give us a little bit of, I know this is a big topic. I mean, the book is like this big and I've been trying to get through this for a year now, I think. And I'm like rereading sections. So I know this is a big topic, but maybe you can give us a little bit of a summary of what this is all about and how this is maybe helpful for your work with people that suffer from scoliosis.
Absolutely. And you know what might be nice? I know you have the ability to check in and do little questionnaires with the people that are watching. So I'm curious to find out how many people have actually heard of anatomy trains before. You know, I've been teaching this for many years. And when I first started, people said, what? Or I say, I would talk about fascia and they'd be like, huh? And now increasingly I'll say fascia or I'll say tensegrity and the hands will raise and people have heard of these things. So really our paradigm is beginning to shift. So let me just go in a little bit about anatomy trains and what I do. As you said, thank you for that lovely introduction. My training is, I'm an exercise physiologist, I'm a physical therapist. So I'm very much Western trained. I'm trained in the medical model. And it wasn't until I also became a massage therapist that I started to see this other world of ways to approach the body that were very different from what I did in the PT clinic where I might work on a shoulder or a hip or a knee. And really, you know, I started taking courses and every time I'd ask a question like, why is it that a foot problem can lead to a back problem? Why is it that having a right hip problem leads to a left shoulder problem? And every time the person would say, oh, you have to go study with Tom Myers. Oh, you have to go study with Tom Myers. And I was like, who's this Tom Myers guy? You know, this was back in 2004 or something. Never heard of him. And his book had just come out a few years before. But I went out finally and I bought the book and it was like the light switch went off because he's now started, instead of talking about individual muscles and, you know, recruiting more to get more, he was talking about continuities. He was talking about how everything in the body is interconnected and intercommunicating and that it's, and as we're going to talk about this more, but as everything is this relationship between our skeletal geometry and our myofascia and our central nervous system. And so it would then start making perfect sense why a foot problem could lead to a back problem, why a hip problem could lead to a shoulder problem. And so I had to train with him. So I became a structural integrator. So in addition to physical therapy, I am a hands-on structural integrator, which is a very holistic way of working with the bodies, very systematically, hands-on myofascial work. And a lot of it really helps to re-educate the body and the mind. So reintegrate the system. That really, once I finished my training, I said to Tom, too few people know about this. I want to teach for you. And as luck would have it, he said, great, come on in next month and we're doing this thing. So that's when I started my tutorials and my apprenticeship. And I've been a teacher for him for many years now. And this is such an exciting field because in the field of fascia and fascia research, there is so much new information coming out all the time. And so really our way of looking at the body is shifting and shifting and shifting. So it's really an exciting time to be doing what we're doing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I'm just going to acknowledge the chat here. So we've got about 15 people that are here live and there's usually more people coming in. Tatiana is here. She's a regular of ours. She's saying good morning. Wendy is saying she just subscribed, so she must have just come across this, which is fabulous. So yes, guys, I don't have the, so it's not like Zoom, so I can't run a poll, but you can let me know in the chat if you have heard of Anatomy Trains and if you've heard of Tom Myers before, or if this is like a completely new, like, what are they even talking about? What is this? I'm here to cure my scoliosis, right? I want you to tell me what to do. Right, good, lovely. So just tell us a little bit more about how you kind of work with people. You've got a clinic or studio, or I don't know how you would kind of describe it. Do people come to you?
Yes, people come to me, although, you know, now in the era of COVID, I am doing a lot of virtual appointments, so I'm seeing people from all over the place. Obviously, I prefer to be able to get in there and put my hands on people and really see how things are moving. But yes, I am here, and I have two spaces. I have two studios. This is my bigger one where I run workshops as well over in a small town in New Hampshire. And I work doing a combination. I take everything I've learned, because really over the course of many years, you've learned so many different things. So you learn to take things and put more tools into your box. So as I work with people with scoliosis, my work as a physical therapist comes in. My work as a Shroff instructor comes in. My work as an Anatomy Trains instructor is really in there, because as we'll talk about, scoliosis is not just a problem with the back. It is a total body pattern. So my structural integration head and eyes really come into play whenever I'm working with people. I do a combination of awareness exercises, literal exercises to help unwind the scoliosis patterns, and hands-on work. So I do a lot of touch cueing as well to help people really find forgotten areas in their body, and as well as SI-type myofascial work while I am working with people. Yeah, so it's a pool of everything, kind of a mix.
Yeah, that's great. No, I love this. And I was so excited when I came across you, because I always had this, you know, I put things in like a drawer. So there's the Shroff people, right? They've got their approach. You've got the yoga people, who are very separate, and Shroff and yoga, sometimes not so agreeable. And then I came across the whole Anatomy Trains work, and Tom Myers does lots of work for yoga teachers, actually educating yoga teachers, which is why that kind of felt like a thing that is going quite well together. Mm-hmm. And then I was wondering how you're marrying this with your Shroff work, which is so specific, right? And you know, very much quite a strict German school.
You know, and that's true. And that's very PT in its nature, isn't it? That we're very much research-based, very much objective tests and measures, and very specific interventions. So, you know, and I pick and choose from my Shroff work, because sometimes I'll say, oh, this very specific exercise is really going to help this person. But then I also do things that are more tensei gritty and fascial based. Mm-hmm. So I am not quite as regimented as a typical, you know, what people might think of as a Shroff instructor. In so many ways, because I have so many hats that I have worn, I never really fit into any one category. I am a Pilates instructor, but Pilates instructors say, you don't do that the way I do that. I'm a physical therapist. Now, believe me, a lot of physical therapists say, wait a minute, you know, you work very differently. I'm also a yoga instructor. I don't get to teach these days. I'm just too busy. But my studio here, for years, we had been doing a lot of yoga at the studio. I take little bits of everything and integrate it. It's, and every single person is such an individual that somebody may get some more very specific trough type intervention, where somebody else might get, let's experience, let's change how we're standing. Let's change our posture, our pelvis orientation. Now play with that, because that might resonate with somebody else to be able to make the changes in the communication between the feet, the spine, and in the brain. So a lot of things that I do are really what I call experientials, where you're just playing with it throughout the day. Oh, notice how you're standing, or notice how you're sitting. And let's try doing it this way, where your spine is in a more neutral position, that you're not feeding into a pattern. Mm. Rather, you're supporting a more neutral alignment. So there's there's quite a lot of different ways I approach it, and I integrate it. So I'll take a bit of this and a bit of that.
Yeah.
And then I throw in some of this stuff that I've developed with it, because those of you who are familiar with Schroth, as Christina said, it's very German, right? It's very, very specific, and it's rather static, isn't it? You know, a lot of the things that we do, I'm a level one Schroth instructor. So a lot of the things that we did, you're in a certain position and you're in a corrected posture and you're breathing and you're contracting, and it's very effective, but there's no movement with it. Mm-hmm. And we're not always in a gravity position. So I've also developed exercises about I call it finding home. Once you have found an alignment that unwinds your pattern of being able to perform other exercises in this position, much more dynamic exercises, so that it hopefully has more carryover into what we're doing every single day of our life.
Yes, absolutely. It makes sense, doesn't it? Because we're not static, right? I mean, we're not in one position and then holding it for this. It's not a natural thing to do. We want to be able to take it into different types of movement. Can you see when I bring up these comments here? Can you see that?
Yes, I am.
Yes. Okay.
Scroll through.
You have been seeing them. Okay. So Liz is here from Yorkshire. Has heard of fascia, but wants to learn a little bit more. Wendy has obviously just subscribed, so she's got quite a big leg length difference. Good. Shalina is also, Shalina's from Canada. She's saying she wants to learn more. So stay here. It's more coming. And then we've got a question here. Sophie from Portugal is asking, do you think that the Schroth method can reduce the curvature of the spine after skeletal maturity? What's your thoughts on that?
And I wait until my very last slide and I show the changes in a 58-year-old woman and in a 62-year-old woman who both had AIS. And you will see, and it really, I talk about people, I'm not curing anybody. And I'm not, I am the facilitator. Mm-hmm. I am the person helping you find a new alignment and strength in a new alignment in your body and a better relationship to gravity. I've taught workshops for years, as I said, and people say, well, how long do I have to do something? And I say, well, it's only too late when you're dead. Because I have worked with people in their 80s and they are making changes. As long as you're moving and you're doing and you're trying to adapt, your body is designed to adapt and change. Mm-hmm. So Schroth work does help definitely in the adult population. And really one of the complaints I always hear about Schroth is it takes so long. I spend an hour and a half doing an exercise. So sometimes I really want to work with somebody to say, okay, realistically, how much time do you have to spend each day on exercise versus on experientials, on being aware of things and making changes? And if somebody has a half an hour, well, then I'm going to design things that they can do in a half an hour. I want to really respect the amount of time that people have in their lives, especially now when everything has sort of been turned upside down, and people have kids at home and just totally different schedules. Yeah.
Mm. Yes, absolutely. Good. So thank you, guys. I see a couple of more people joining us here. And Wendy is saying, yes, hearing body can always change. She loves that. Good.
Yes, Wendy.
Lovely. Do you want to, shall we kind of jump into your presentation? I'm just very excited about this. And I know you've got a few slides for us. So those guys who are maybe just listening, I'm sure you'll still get a lot of out of it. But maybe if there is something that isn't quite clear, you might want to jump into the YouTube video.
Good. Mm-hmm. Good.
So I've got it up now.
Excellent. And everybody can see.
Hopefully everyone can see that.
And let me go in and on mine. I'm glad we did that introduction, because otherwise you would say, wait a minute, this is about scoliosis. Why are you talking about fashion in 10 seconds? And so you've done a nice introduction as to why I'm going to spend my first bit talking about these other things. So if for the sake of those who haven't quite heard a lot about fascia, I'm going to touch on it. Fascia is a body-wide complex. It's a continuous web of tissue that exists in every single organ in our body, every tissue in our body, and right down and into every cell in our body. It is our organ of form. It is what gives us our shape in our body. So if you were to dissolve everything in my body that was not fascia, you would still see and recognize me. It would just be a fascial me, but it would be me, because fascia is what gives us our shape. It consists of collagen. We've most of all heard of collagen and elastin and reticulin. So elastin is really a more stretchy form of protein. Reticulin is very fine web-like protein structures for more delicate structures. It also has ground substance. And one of the ones that you probably have heard of is hyaluronic acid, but the real name is hyaluronan. And hyaluronic acid is the stuff that everybody's putting into face creams and everything, because it loves water. And so it really soaks up the water and keeps things hydrated. But in our body, it keeps things gliding and moving. So to feel that action, just simply as you're sitting there, just start to glide your shoulder blades up and down and across, and you can feel the shoulder blades moving. And maybe you can even feel the muscles, the layers of muscles gliding on the deeper layers. And if you feel that, you can thank your hyaluronan, your ground substance, for being nice and healthy and enabling you to have that glide. And we see in this picture here the different layers. Christine, can you see my little cursor?
Yes, we can see your cursor. I don't know if you can make that presentation full screen from there. I don't know.
Let's give that a shot. Well, I'm going to put you into play.
That's better. That's easier to see.
I don't have a cursor anymore, but I'll talk about it. The top layer is our skin, and our skin also has collagen in it. And we see then in our superficial fascia below, that layer beneath the skin and this first layer, you might even be able to feel this. That's where we have some fat. It's so if you pinch yourself and you can pick it up, you'll feel that fat in there. And the white lines that are going vertically between those layers are collagen fibers. And so that is keeping the communication between your skin and your superficial fascia. You may even feel like, oh yeah, I can glide the skin on those layers that are deeper. Between the superficial and the deep, we have another layer of fat and layer of collagen that keeps that gliding. And then you see those blue lines, and that is those layers of hyaluronic acid that also keep us sliding and gliding and moving. And in fact, where the fat is too, there is also ground substance. But even in the muscle layers, we also have gliding and sliding that happens. So in between those layers of muscles. And, you know, I'm going to be doing a lecture on this coming up for a bunch of PTs and athletic trainers. When we get hurt and we stop moving, or if we're in a position where we're not moving something, this is where that hyaluronan, instead of holding on to that water and being all nice and slidey and dry, glidey, I should say, dries out. The water kind of wrings out like you're wringing out a sponge. And instead of being nice and glidey, it gets a little stuck. And it has more friction. And this can eventually lead to pain or limited range of motion, that inability maybe to reach the arm overhead or so on. And it really, especially in early days, they're finding more and more, this isn't fibrosis, it's really a lack of hydration and a clumping up of this hyaluronan. So our fascia is also key in force transmission. So it transmits forces throughout your entire body. It's also important for communication throughout the body. So communication from muscle to muscle, in between muscles, and from different sites in your body up to your brain and back down again. So it's key in that. It also communicates down into the cells, and in some cases can help the cell. It changes how that cell is acting. It might tell the cell to divide and create more cells or produce a certain protein. So all of this communication is happening in our body without us even knowing it. Now, fascia also has viscous properties, which means it reduces shear. It slows us down sometimes. It has elastic properties, which is why we are able to jump, why the basketball player can jump up and do that basket shot, is because of loading and springing off of their fascia that's in their tendons. And it's also plastic. And in that sense, this is the sort of physics sense of plastic. It means it can remodel based on the stresses that we're putting into it. Now, that can be a good thing and it can be a bad thing, as we'll talk about. So it's forever remodeling, you know, and this goes back to what we're saying. It's only too late when you die, because it's always remodeling. And finally, fascia is our richest sensory organ in our body. There are about 6 times more sensory nerve endings in the fascia than in the muscle. So it is responsible for setting the tone in our body, for communicating to the brain, our proprioception, our interoception. So it is super important for sensory functions as well. So fascia, even though it has those same constituents, it takes many, many different shapes in the body. And we see up over on the upper left-hand corner where it says one net, you see those things that look like honeycombs. Well, that is actually little fascial bags that every single muscle cell lives in. So every muscle cell lives in a little fascial bag. And the picture next to it is a dissection where they've pulled the muscle fibers apart. And we can see that things don't only connect longitudinally, but they connect side to side. And this is how we communicate and transmit force. And then I just threw in a picture so you can get a sense. That's a diagram of a muscle and how the muscle connects into the bone. And you see then, just from the drawing wise, how every little filament is in a fascial bag. And then groups of filaments are in another fascial bag. And then we group them all together into another one. So we have the endomysium and the perimysium and the epimysium. So every fiber, everything is in bags upon bags upon bags. And then as the muscle fibers themselves end at the muscle, the fascia continues. And that's what becomes our tendon. And then we used to say, oh, well, that just attaches into the bone. And what we realize now is that it interfaces with the bone and interfaces with the ligaments and the joint capsules, and then it takes off to become the next bit of muscle, or myofascia. And myofascia is really a better way of saying it. So the last picture here is probably the one you might be most familiar with. This is straight out of Body Worlds. Maybe you've gone and seen one of those Body Worlds exhibit. And these are these full body dissections that have been plastinated to preserve them. And the white bits are what we think of as fascia. But what they have done, really the entire body is in a white fascial bag, and they've kind of cut it out so that you can see things like the abdominal wall, and you see the thickening of fascia around the knee and the iliotibial band that comes up the side of the leg for stability for the leg as well. So oftentimes we think of this as fascia, but it's really functionally so much more. And I have said how fascia is your organ of form. So if you look in the lower corner on the my left, probably your right, is that a heart. That is actually a pig heart. That they what they did with that was they put it in a solvent and dissolved everything that was not fascia. And what you see is the actual heart. And so this is really how we develop. We start with a fascial scaffolding, and all our organs and tissues develop on that. So you might be putting in muscle fibers, you might be depositing minerals for bones, but everything is, you know, just like building out your house, everything has the scaffolding, the shape is from the fascia. And this is really quite fascinating because what they're doing with this, the research that's going on with these ghost hearts, as they're called, is they're working to be able to seed these hearts with somebody's own muscle cells, their heart cells, such that they can grow you a new heart. And this has profound impacts because now if you get a heart transplant, you have to go on many, many drugs to keep you from rejecting the heart. And this would actually be your own tissues, your own heart going back into your body, so you wouldn't have to take all those drugs. So it's pretty fascinating research that's going on with that. Mm. Now, fascia can be very slidey and goopy and glidey, like we see in that center bottom picture. And that's what I was talking about with the ground substance. And finally, we can see on the last one, it's another layer cake, isn't it? But what I wanted you to notice is that we have arteries and nerves and blood vessels. So you see the red and the blue, those are our arteries. And you might notice the little yellow coming right next to it, which are our nerves. So those are all traveling in the layers of fascia. Now, I love, this is dissection. I should have given you forewarning. So if you are a little creeped out about looking at actual body.
Yeah, tissue, look away now.
Look away, don't watch this. Gambarteau is a hand surgeon, and he was one of the first people to come up with videos of actual in vivo, which means in the person, movements. And this is a video of a tendon sliding in its sheath. So you can see, one, how wet and slimy looking it is, but see how the blood vessels are in there. So the fascia not only protects them, but it keeps things sliding and moving on each other. And we see here another tendon. We see how the fascia has really oriented in straight lines because your tendon is a very strong line of pull. All these different layers that are happening, and you can see one layer moving on the other. So this happens in a big way when we move our muscles on each other, but also on a very small and microscopic level as well. I could just watch those videos for days. Now, one other thing I want to talk about, a couple before we continue on, is that we all have our own fascial constitution. And some of this is genetic, some of it is hormonal, and some of it can come from the stressors or activities in our life. But we all have a different fascial constitution. So we can see that some people are very, very bendy. You look at the skater and the dancer and the yoga person, whereas other people are stiff. You see the guys, the one guy trying to touch his toe, having to bend through and do all sorts of things that are not really great for his body. And the other gentleman trying to touch his toes, and which he doesn't have a prayer of being able to do. And than somebody who is more muscular. So we see people who have sort of a lean and bendy fascial constitution, and we have other people that are very muscular or very stiff. And so, as I said, part of that's genetic. And if you're not sure about where you might lie, there are a few tests that I do as a physical therapist. So the first one, you could take your hand and just place your hand up. Hopefully, can you see me?
Yeah,
I can see you. See if you can take your thumb and touch your thumb up to your forearm. And if you can, you give yourself a point. And you can see I'm nowhere near it. And then I do the other one because they can differ. I'm a little closer on this side, but I'm still nowhere near it.
Yeah.
And then you could place your hand down on a surface and lift up your pinky. Can you get your pinky up to 90 degrees? Once again, I don't have a chance. But some people very easily, right up there. And we do it on the other side. Another couple of points. Then we look at our elbows. And when you extend your elbows, does your elbow do a bit of a back bend like mine does here? Or is it straight like my one on the other side? Then finally, you think about, can you just drop down and touch the floor without even thinking twice about it? And do you tend to hyperextend your knees? So that's what we call the Baton test. And it really is a way to start to see where you might be on the stiffness to hypermobility spectrum. So the more of those things you can do, the more you tend towards hypermobility, the fewer that you can do. So I get 2 points for this because I can palm the floor, but it's mainly because I've trained it. And I have one elbow that hyperextends. So I'm more on that stiff side. And in fact, when I was in my yoga teacher training, I just called myself the Tin Man of yoga teacher training because a lot of my people were able to do things like that young woman is doing where they could touch their toes to their head. And I didn't have a chance. So you know, we work with the body we have, and that's absolutely.
But is it the more points you have, the better it is?
Not necessarily. Thank you for asking that question. It means that you tend to be much more loose of limb. And so when you're thinking about this in relation to scoliosis, you're able to move more, your body will probably have a tendency to drop more into the scoliosis pattern because you're not as stiff. There's not as much resistance to doing that. And from a training standpoint, for those of you who are trainers, when I have somebody who tends towards hypermobility, I'm really going to balance them out by giving them exercises that help them add stability into their system. Because if we have a lot of mobility and we don't have the stabilization, that's when we can hurt ourselves. So if we look at our skater and our ballerina, they are incredibly mobile, hypermobile, but they're also very strong, or else they wouldn't be able to do what they're doing. Where somebody like that could run into trouble is that they still, maybe they're genetically hypermobile like that, and then they stop training and they don't have the strength to support it. And so in that case, then they can run into joint problems and back problems and so on. And there really is a whole spectrum with this. With scoliosis, we call it syndromic scoliosis, where somebody has a condition called Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, where the kind of collagen they make doesn't have enough stiffness to it. And so they're just too loose and they have a very hard time stabilizing their body. And they can unfortunately dislocate joints. They do tend to get scoliosis because they have a harder time stabilizing their spine. And that's some of the people that I work with as well. There's a lot more to that condition, but that's at one way far end of the spectrum. Just because you couldn't bend your joints and you're flexible does not mean you have something like that. You really want to get that tested out. Does that answer the question?
Yes, it does. And is that the reason that girls are kind of more tend to be more affected. And what I see certainly from the girls and the teenagers that I work with, they are very flexible. Mm-hmm. And they're kind of more on the hypermobile side.
Yep.
I would say, generally speaking. I mean, it doesn't mean that everyone is like this. Yeah. But
because what happens at puberty? Girls start getting more estrogen. Boys start having more testosterone. And the estrogen makes us looser. And mm-hmm. that every time you go through your cycle in the month, you go through days where you become more flexible. I was at a lecture once and it was really fascinating to me. The lecturer said, you know, every month it's like you go through pregnancy so that you have days where where your ligaments are much looser, that everything is much more relaxed. And this is another reason why women have more laxity, are more stretchy than just as you said, Christine. And it's another reason why girls tend to have more scoliosis than boys, and girls tend to have more severe scoliosis than boys and in the adolescent because of this tendency towards laxity. Mm. Now, the other fascinating thing is that on the other end of the spectrum, what happens when we go through menopause and we start losing our estrogen levels, your fascia starts stiffening back up again. And you might say, oh, great. Well, if you're going through it, I'm going to tell you that a lot of times people are saying this is not a great thing. So it really does change. It changes how you are inhabiting your body for sure. All right, I'll move on. And so anatomy trains. So I talked a little bit about this at the beginning, and these are pictures of some of the anatomy trains. So I would encourage you to think of, instead of the picture over in the corner of the red guy where you can see the individual muscles, instead of thinking of yourself as individual muscles, realize that all your muscles are interconnected into chains or trains or slings. Those are all different names for the same thing. And that they are interconnected such that that force goes and is transmitted throughout your body from your toes to your head, spiraling around. And the dissection picture is of the back line, which is the one, the furthest most on one side by the anatomy, the back line of our body. And we can see that it goes right from the bottom of the foot up through our calf, our hamstring, through our sacrum, into our back muscles, right up the neck. And it ends right here at our eyebrows. So we have one of these each on each side. And why these are important, it's movement, it's force transmission, as I have said, it's helping to stabilize you. But these myofascia is really what's holding your postural compensations. So if I'm thinking about working with my scoliosis, I'm thinking about these lines and organizing my lines such that my spine has better support, such that my pelvis is in better alignment, and so on. I want you to feel this. So if you happen to be in a place where you can just stand up, and I want to illustrate what I'm talking about. Christine, can you see me, most of me?
Up till the knees. The knees are cut off. Let me just make you bigger again as well. There we go. That's better. We can't hear you very well, though.
Okay, I've been talking about the back line, which starts at our feet and yeah. goes right up to our eyebrows. So if it's okay on your own back, just roll yourself down until your fingertips are just a few inches off the ground. And you'll feel the stretch in your body coming up the back of your legs into your back and so right up into your head. Now, if you tend to be tighter, you may notice that you can't let your head drop, that you keep wanting to pull your head up. And that's another thing. But once you're down there without touching the ground, just simply lift your head. And what you'll notice is the amount of tension in that line decreases. then let your head drop back down and feel how the tension, that force transmission, increases because we're putting more pull or more tension in the line. The other thing you can try is just simply bending your knees a little bit, if you didn't have to bend them already to get down there. And you'll notice once again that by breaking that locking out or straightening of the knees, it changes how much tension there is. And you might find, oh, I can go a little deeper into my forward bend as soon as I bend the knees. So it really helps you to feel this sense of a continuity in your body. And this is throughout our entire system. So you can come on back in if you were sitting or standing up. And we can even feel this if I just simply sit and I place my hand on my chest and on my belly. For somebody like me, who's I'm more of that stiff fascial person, we also call them Vikings. As soon as I start to lift my head, I feel tension. Here. I lift my head a little more. Oh, I'm already feeling tension in my belly.
I just had a little crack. That was quite nice.
That adjustment was for free.
Thank you.
Yeah, my pleasure. So, but, you know, I teach all these workshops and some people say, well, I don't feel it until I'm here. Well, you might have that more loose fascia. So it takes a little longer to get that force, to get that sense of pull in your system. Or you may not go anywhere because maybe you're somebody whose posture is here and you don't feel it because you're kind of locked up, which is what happens to a lot of my older clients, where I have to work to get the tissues to open back out again so that the forces will be transmitted back through the body. Does that all make sense?
Yes, very good. Perfect. Thank you. Getting lots of Wendy saying she's taking notes.
Well, if you see on YouTube, you can watch it again.
Yes, exactly.
So now the next thing I want to talk about is tensegrity. And when I first heard this word, I was like, what? And when I heard the explanation, I was like, I just don't get it. Oh, it's so hard. So I hope that because of my struggles in understanding this really important principle, that it will help you. So tensegrity was a word that was coined by Buckminster Fuller. And it is about structures that get their structural integrity through a combination of discontinuous compression members and continuous tension members. All right? And you see that woman there, and so the little sticks are her discontinuous compression members, and the little wires between the sticks are the tension members. And so I have a little model here that illustrates that. So we say we achieve equilibrium when the tension members have just enough tension to maintain the shape of the structure. So there, the tension members push in on the compression members push back out on the tension members, and we achieve equilibrium. So that's great. And so we call that baseline level our pre-stress. It's just the name it got given. And so that's what we have in our system just to sit and be, our pre-stress for our tensegrity. And some of us have high pre-stress, so we're kind of tensioned up like this guy. And some of us have low pre-stress, right? High and low. So some people are a little looser and floppier at baseline, and some people are a little stiffer, kind of go, go, go at baseline. So, and it's just who you are. It's not that you're better or worse. It's just who we are. Now, no matter what we do, we have to add to that pre-stress to move. And we do that by adding more tension into the system. So in Pilates and yoga, what do we always cue? Reach. And go ahead and just reach out. Really try to touch the walls. And you will feel how you've added tension into the system. That helps stabilize you. It helps elongate you. And it creates stability for the posture. we also, some, you know, people who do muscle, they're adding tension too. They're compressing to do that. So there's different ways to do it. But the one that I think a lot of us are familiar with is in yoga and Pilates, where we are doing a reaching, right? So this becomes important because ideally we have equal, you know, to keep this beautiful alignment, it's all balanced out. And a lot of times in my lectures for anatomy trains, I say, well, if a bit of your myofascia gets shortened, look at what happens to the structure. Do you see how that entire structure just changed?
Mm.
So I'll do that again. So one little bit got short. The entire structure changed. Now, some bits changed a lot. And some bits only changed a little, but the entire thing changed. And so as we're working, we talk about opening out these shortened areas, because the shortened areas then mean that other areas are overlong. And these are the ones we're probably going to complain about, those ones that got overstretched, so that we're trying to recreate that balance in the system. Now, I will submit to you, when it comes to scoliosis, if I change that compression member, so as we'll just be talking about, if I change that, change the shape of my bone, I am also going to change all the tension in my system. And that will alter my posture as well. Hopefully that made some sense, because that
makes sense.
Okay, good. I'm going to skip the video and go right on. And just so you know, every motion in our body is an interplay between our joints, our bones, our soft tissues, and I would add our central nervous system, our brain. And we're always in the field of gravity. So we're always reacting to gravity and the ground reaction force. So we always have to negotiate upright movement against the forces of nature, against momentum, and so on. So it's always something to consider. Now, finally, I get to scoliosis. So scoliosis, I'm not going to spend a lot of time, because I'm sure, you know, I've listened to other of the webinars, so I know so many of you are really well-versed in scoliosis. It comes from the Greek word scoliosis, which means crookedness or bent. And it is a triplanar deformation of the spine, triplanar, which means three planes. And really, I would submit to you that it is a total body pattern that we assess through the deviation in the spine. And we measure it with the Cobb angle. We look at the side bends, but we really need to address not just the side bends that are happening in the body, but the rotations and the changes front to back that also happen in the body. So scoliosis changes the shape of the bones and soft tissues themselves, as well as how they are aligned. So morphology and geometry. And as an anatomy trained structure, I always say it's all lines all the time. So every bit of your body, every line, anatomy trained line, is involved in the scoliosis pattern to varying degrees. Now, most of what I'll talk about is AIS, because over 80% of people have idiopathic adolescent scoliosis, but also DLS, or degenerative lumbar scoliosis, that happens in adults, because a lot of adults end up with degenerative lumbar scoliosis. And the older you get, the more likely it is to have that. Now, there's a theory of Razzo, and Christine had Meredith Weiss on, another Meredith, who was talking about this, but I think it bears going through again. So in scoliosis, you can see that picture on the AIS side of the screen of the two vertebrae. And normally our vertebrae should look like a little rectangle or square. And in scoliosis, the vertebrae can become wedged such that they're wider in the front and wider on one side. And because of our tensional relationships, this is going to encourage the vertebrae to slide forward on the one below it and over to the side. And as it does that, it also starts to rotate because of the way our spine is connected. And this is what gives us that classic rib prominence that we see. But it also results in a bend in the spine, which is the Cobb angle, and a rotation as well. So I just want to do this with my spine. So this is a typical spine. We normally have a backwards curve, or it's called kyphosis, in our thoracic spine, and a lordosis in our lumbar spine. And we'd be familiar with kyphosis. We see that a lot in older people where they get an increased curve in their back. And when that happens, there's wedging as well, but it's wider in the back. And that wedging would encourage the spine to go into further forward bend. And so as instructors, we're not giving them forward bend exercises. We're trying to get them out of that, trying to lengthen them up. Now, conversely, in scoliosis, it's wedged forward. So the tendency will be for that vertebrae to shift forward, which starts to flatten out that normal thoracic curve. It's also wedged on one side, such that it's going to tend to rotate as well. So that is what's creating this bend and rotation that we see in scoliosis. And having the flatness here can lead to instability in our spine. And this is why we sometimes say, you know, when somebody has a moderate or a less stable scoliosis, you really don't want to do back bend exercises because your spine is already, in essence, in a back bend. You know, normally it would be here. And when you do a back bend, it would do this. Well, you started here. So the last thing you want to do is to try to force it to do more, because that could actually damage some of your structures and destabilize the spine.
Mm. So would you say, because kind of as a person with scoliosis and, you know, seeing lots of people with scoliosis, and the first thing they always say is about, especially those that have a thoracic scoliosis, I've got this hump, I've got this, I don't like it, it's rounding. But you're actually saying it's going the other way, or maybe you are saying that actually your other side is more of a problem than the one that is rounding.
What I am saying, and you know, that's the thing, because we look at ourselves from the side, don't we? And on the side of the rib prominence, it looks like you're really rounded, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. But if you look at the spine itself, the ribs are coming out like that, but the spine is pulled in very flat. And so right. It's really those ribs that we have to get to. We need to derotate and get the spine back into a little more normal curve. It seems counterintuitive if we're looking just at the rib prominence, but when we start to look at people and we'll really see, oh, wait a minute, the spine itself is really flat. There's not much space from the front of this person to the back of them where their spine is. There's a lot of space where their rib prominence is. As we see in this young woman, there's a very large rib prominence, but her spine has actually gone forward. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. And this is why, you know, and it's always a matter of degrees, because, you know, this is where I sometimes differ from other practitioners. If you are an adult and you have a 12 degree, very stable scoliosis, I'm not going to say, oh, you can never do a movement that would open you out. You know, you can't go into Savasana over a bolster, you know, but you always want to do exercises to counteract that and find home. So, you know, but if you were somebody who had a very severe scoliosis, I might say, okay, now you really have to be more careful. So there's no one size fits all for how I approach it.
So Radhika is saying, of course, kyphosis and scoliosis.
Yeah, a little less common, but it happens. I actually am working with somebody right now who has that combination. And in that case, I'm going to treat the kyphosis as well as derotating the spine. Because in your particular case, even though it's less common than this raso of the shifting forward that we see in a lot of people, some people don't. And they end up shifting back. So, you know, the spine did not get the memo of how it was supposed to react. And so, and that's why it's so important to have somebody look at you, because you can't just assume your back looks a certain way. Even when I'm, you know, I have a scoliosis, and if I'm doing things, I get my husband to take pictures of me so I can see the impact of a movement on my particular spine and my particular problems, because that's going to give me a lot of information. And even when I do web chats now, or Zoom calls, I have people who have somebody else in the room, and they're like, oh, this is doing this or this is doing that. So it's really good to have somebody with a good eye looking at you as well. Mm. Excellent.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, you know, this is a little busy picture, but I just want to say here is that if we decide not to do anything about it, we have those wedges and bends, and it's going to tend to create that scoliosis pattern. And it's kind of a feed forward mechanism. So we'll see that muscles will get tight in certain patterns of those lines of pull. Part of the line of pull will get all tense. Part of it will get short. It won't transmit forces in the same way. It won't give us the sensory information in the way, in a good way. So we can kind of not really know where things are in space. And so if we don't do anything about it, it can keep going as a vicious cycle. So that's why it's important. You know, you've talked to so many different people, Christine, who have different ways of approaching it, which is great, because not one approach works for every single person. That's mm-hmm. why I have so many tools in my box. But that you're doing something to counteract the natural tendency of your skeleton, your myofascia, to go out of alignment. Right? So, and it's also about the brain. So we want to be able to work with somebody to get more proprioceptive input, more introceptive input into the brain, so we know where we are, we know where we can find home. But also remember that our brain, you know, we have a way that we feel about our scoliosis. And, you know, sometimes people come to me purely because they just don't like the way they look. Mm-hmm. So our emotions also play into our posture. There's a great book by Stanley Kellerman called Emotional Anatomy. And because after years of being a practitioner, he really started to see how people's emotions were reflected in the posture in their body. So that is so powerful as well. So those of us who are working with people, it's something to consider and keep in mind that, you know, it's not just a body thing. It's, you know, our brain and our mind and our feelings are also involved.
Absolutely. That's a book that is on my list and has been for a long time.
Great book. Absolutely great book. Great book. All right. Now, I show this picture. I didn't even show it in the webinar you took, Christine, because I knew people would look at it and go, ah.
I have actually. I've seen it the other day. I've seen it with the other Meredith, who's also a Schwarz therapist.
Oh, good. I didn't get that far. I didn't see if she showed it.
Yeah. No, she didn't. She didn't show it in there, but she did show it to me. So, yes. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Yeah. The only us. Thing I want you to think about with this one is you know, the one big problem is some people call it S-curve and C-curve or thoracolumbar or thoracic or a major curve or a minor curve. We really don't have our nomenclature really set. But the other thing is that look at how many different types of scoliosis there are within what I would call a 3-curve. It's a type of S-curve. There's many, many different types. They only show 3, but within those 3, there's a lot of variations. Mm. And so we all have different types. And as one of you pointed out, well, I have scoliosis, but I have kyphosis with it. So that we are all unique. and we have to treat each one of these a little differently. So I might choose to do the same exercise, but I'm going to apply it differently depending on the person in front of me. And I just popped this picture in so you could see these curves and see how different the shape of the body is. And because of that, you know, once again, it highlights that I wouldn't do the same thing with the guy that's over on D as I would with the woman at A, because they're very different patterns. So I really have to be very mindful of how I'm working to help that person get as neutral as they can be. Mm. And this I just put in just so you could see that really, even though, you know, we talk about scoliosis and we take pictures of the spine and we calculate our Cobb angles or the side bends, but look at their feet. You can see that their feet are what we call a medial tilt, but there's pronation in the feet. There's the legs not necessarily going straight up and down on the girl on one side, and the other girl has her legs wide to help balance herself out. And this goes all the way up to the head. So remembering that it is a total body pattern. So if you are working to work with your scoliosis, it's not just about doing an exercise for your back. You want to consider your whole being.
Such a good point. Yes.
Yeah. Again, these are some, most of these are pictures of my clients. So you can see how very different a lot of these people look. So I'm not going to necessarily do the same exercise in the same way. I might do an exercise, but I may make adaptations for the person in front of me. Now, that being said, I do have certain things that people can be doing. One thing to remember is that you want to make small incremental changes. Don't try to correct. I really don't like that word. It's just make changes to anybody. But don't overwhelm your system. So make small changes that still feel comfortable to you. When I first started years and years ago as a physical therapist and Pilates instructor, I would, you know, have people, oh, they might be here. I'd say, oh, bring this back and tilt your pelvis and lift your ribs and shoulders back. That person will never be able to hold that because it's just too many things all at once. So now I might say something like, you know what? Just play with lifting your toes and creating an arch. And so as you're at the kitchen counter, lift your toes, create the arch. And notice that as I did that, it got my pelvis back over my feet instead of being in front of me.
Mm.
So just making these small changes can really have an impact. And repetition, repetition, repetition. The more we practice something well, not just doing reps for the sake of reps, but very mindfully, the more we can integrate these small changes habitually. So really trying to find opportunities throughout your day just to practice these little experientials, as I call them. And then remember, as always, nothing should cause pain. So if there's an exercise that you've seen and you want to try, but wow, that hurts my shoulder or that doesn't feel great on my back, you should just avoid it for now and work with somebody to modify it until such a time as you may be able to do it or find out that maybe that's not the best exercise for you. There are certain exercises I just don't do because I know they're not good for my back, mm-hmm. but that's my back. And they may be great for your back, but not great for my back. So simple things. This is a young man I saw, and this is his very first visit. And he has what I call a four-curve scoliosis. You might call it an S-curve, a certain type of S-curve. And he only came to me. He had no pain, but his friends kind of made fun of the way he looked. So all I was working with him that day was getting his pelvis centered back over his feet, getting an arch back in because you can see his feet are tilted in, yeah. and then creating length for his spine. And you can see he has a little pole there, so I just use the pole. So he's contracting his core in this nice, more neutral alignment. So he has a better relationship to gravity. because the further out from gravity we are, the more gravity is going to want to push us further out of our posture. So the better oriented we are to gravity, the less gravity is likely to push us out of posture. And so this was, I sent him home with this and probably just two other things. Just practice these. And he was so, I took these pictures. This was, you know, wasn't for any of these workshops I do. He was so excited. He said, "You have to take a picture of me. I have to show my mom." And I was so, and that goes back to all the feelings and emotions. He saw how quickly he could make a change in his body and that it didn't really take much.
Yes.
And that gave him hope. And it really, you know, saw, oh, wow, I can make a lot of changes. Mm-hmm. I have control over my scoliosis. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to cure my scoliosis. The shape of the bones are changed, but I know how to find home.
Mm. Brilliant.
And the other commonality that I do a lot of is tensional stretching. So traction, if we think of our scoliosis curve like this, as soon as I go into one of those postures, the traction force is going to do this to my spine, and it will lengthen out the curves. Then I can use my breath to open out those areas of concavity that we can see in our body to get more even expansion and more awareness into places we may have forgotten. And in these different positions, part of them will be their homework, but I teach them how to expand their concavities. We do isometric work to strengthen in the neutral range. I do hands-on myofascial work. I do touch cueing and help them with their alignment and their breath. I also encourage people to practice in front of a mirror, because using a mirror, if you can't feel it, if you see it, oftentimes you will make that adjustment. You can assimilate it much faster.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so these are just pictures of me working with some of my different clients to help them. You know, so I teach a class called Defying Gravity, and there's a lot of yoga-like postures. You see me in the center there in Down Dog. But in Down Dog, getting a delicious kind of traction force to help elongate my spine. This is also good because if you have a shoulder issue, there is very, very little weight on my shoulders. So it's allowing my rib cage to drop away from my pelvis and allowing me to elongate my body. And then the woman over on that other side with the poles, these are some of the, just an example of some of the dynamic exercises I have people doing so that they're learning to find home and to be very strong against forces that are trying to pull them out of balance.
Mm.
And use sticks all the time for the ground reaction force, because as Isaac Newton said, for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. So if I push down, if you push down into the arms of your chair, you lift up. It's just the way things work. So by using the sticks, it creates lift. And Judith Aston was the person who taught me about using sticks in this manner. She's really quite a genius in movement, and Aston patterning is her thing. But
great. Yeah. I thought this was a Schwoz thing, because I've been given that as well. It's like I had to find some sticks around the house. So I was just using the handles of a mop.
and you know,
you have to be creative.
They have those big, huge ones too. But so many other people are using sticks. Yeah. Yeah. Hmm. So it's not just a Schwoz thing. It really is used widely. And then I encourage people to be able to hold their alignment. So you see that gentleman using a TRX, and he has learned how to stabilize his spine so that he can do hand, you know, he likes doing free weight training. He loves doing Pilates. He likes doing TRX, but he couldn't do it when he first came to me.
Right.
And then this is my last thing about making change, because that was the first question. So I finally get to the answer for this. The woman that you see just the, her back there, she came to me. She had scoliosis diagnosis as a teenager. She was 58. Big contra dancer. And she wasn't able to contra dance because it just hurt her back too much. And I gave her, I think, 4 exercises to do that included unwinding the spine, breathing, isometrics, and elongation, and aligning the body, not just the spine, but the body. And we did, in 6 weeks, 4 treatment sessions, she came back, and we took another picture. And she didn't really think she had changed much, but all she said was, my back doesn't hurt anymore and I'm happy. And I took the picture and I showed her and she was like, wow.
That's an amazing change, yes.
You know, but she was very diligent. She practiced every day. And then what I said is like, okay, so now you maintain. You do your exercises a few times a week, or you do 1 or 2 of them every day. So it doesn't take you as long, but you're always being mindful about your posture. Because if you have your exercise, but you then spend the rest of your day in a poor posture, it's not going to help as much, right? It's kind of makes sense, doesn't it? And then here's a 62-year-old woman who came in to me and had been diagnosed. She actually didn't get diagnosed until she was an adult, but it was a typical AIS pattern. And she kind of remembers being a little crooked when she was younger, but nobody ever brought her to the doctor. And so I looked at her and I said, well, wow, what's the strongest thing here where she could end up really having a problem? And you can see it's sort of her front and back. Hopefully you see that. So that's really where I focused on. And that's where she was the one doing those exercises here with the sticks. So that I'm trying to get her to be able to stand up tall and not shift her pelvis forward and collapse her upper body.
Yeah.
So look at the change she made in, and really I show the people what to do and they do it. And the people who are doing things are really making profound changes in short periods of time. Mm. Now, I will say she still has scoliosis.
I was going to ask you that. Does that make her X-ray look any different?
Yeah. So one of the things, you know, I know you were talking with Lauren Fishman, Dr. Fishman. And as a doctor, he has this ability to just take x-rays of people. But a lot of times as a physical therapist, if the person comes in with their x-rays and in pain or having a problem, and we get them to this great place and they're out of pain, and it's very challenging for me to go back to the doctor and say, you know, I'd really like another x-ray. And oftentimes they'll tell me, well, I don't want to expose this person to radiation because they feel fine now. And they look, you can see the difference. But from a clinical standpoint, boy, wouldn't it be helpful if we could do these other x-rays, or especially those ones that they have in some areas which are very low radiation, you know? Mm. But you can see the difference in her alignment.
But would you suspect that could the bones actually, I mean, maybe not in 4 weeks, but over time, could the bones change at all? Could this actually reduce the curve?
I would say we will reduce the curve. And that bone change question, that came up when I was doing the anatomy trains lecture. And I said, and I still believe this, if you had asked me that question 10 years ago with what I knew then, I would have said, absolutely not. Your bones have changed. That's the way they are. With what I know now about fascia, about forces, about the way our bones remodel, I don't know the answer. And so I got very intrigued, and I'm going to be reaching out to a couple of the researchers who are doing a lot of serial x-rays, because I want to actually assess the spine to see, are we starting to change the way the disc is oriented, the way the bone is oriented? If the Hoyer-Volkmann law says if I compress it, it's going to get shorter, and if I tension it, it's going to get wider, and that will deteriorate my spine. Well, what if I do the opposite? And wouldn't it help to reestablish a normal relationship? And I don't know the answer to that question. Mm. But I really want to.
We all do, isn't it? Yeah. Here's another question for you from Holly. Great question. If you have AIS, are you more likely to get DLS?
That's a really interesting question because they have two different etiologies. AIS, as the name implies, is idiopathic, and it starts younger, and it tends to progress very slowly as an adult, unless you have like this one woman that I show here. She had pretty poor postural patterns. You know, she had bad postural habits, in which case she was getting degenerative scoliosis in there. DLS, we know the things that cause it. For example, a leg length discrepancy, having pelvic obliquity, which is just a fancy way of saying your pelvis is out of alignment. You know, maybe it's just tilted one way, or maybe it's twisted a little bit. Maybe you had an injury that caused an asymmetry. So we know what causes that. The unfortunate thing with that, one, it starts later in life, and it progresses much more rapidly if you don't do something about it. So you could end up with having degeneration in your spine from your AIS. You'd still be called in mm-hmm. something with AIS, but now you have degeneration in your spine. And I have seen that. But you have a bonus going for you. If you are learning to realign yourself, you're going to be somewhat less likely to have these things happen.
Yes, yeah, makes sense. Yeah. Good, thank you. There's loads of people who want you to treat them, and they're asking if you do that online as well.
I do some consultations online. I didn't throw my email in here. You have that, and you can, when you post things, we can.
I will add it in the description. Yes, your website is already in there.
Okay, great. And on my website, you can contact me. It's a pretty low tech kind of website. It's my community based website, but I do some Zoom consults with people. It's obviously better to have your hands on people. I'm working through, I'm getting better and better at doing things on Zoom with people. I am hoping against hope that maybe in the fall, I'll be back to having small group workshops that I run here at my studio, because the way our vaccination is finally going really great guns. I've had my second one. Yay. So that we will be in a place where it's we can finally get together again.
Yes, absolutely. And we were talking as well about maybe a workshop. So guys, if you enjoyed this, do let us know, because then maybe we can get Meredith to do a little kind of a longer workshop for us, which can be a little bit more practical as well, and where we can maybe learn some of the things that we can do.
And really some of those sort of simple traction kind of things. It's pretty low tech what I do, and you can kind of see behind me that I just have poles in my studio. And so now with the advent of COVID, a lot of my students that used to come here and do their workouts got poles at home. And so we do it all on Zoom. And it works pretty well. So yeah.
Yes, lovely.
And not very expensive either. Buying a Schroth ladder is an event. Definitely.
I was going to say.
but this is something you can do for under $100. So it's actually good.
Yes, I've been thinking already how I can do this. I've got a chin up bar. So maybe, you know, I can arrange something with that one, put a strap on there or something like that. Yeah, thank you so much. I mean, we've taken up so much of your time, and you've been so generous.
I love this subject, so I could talk forever. So thank you all for bearing with me. And I hope you learned a little something and got interested in something. And with my email, I do get back to people when they send me questions. It may not be immediately, because I'm fairly busy. I'm working on a webinar right now. My other passion is osteoporosis.
Yes, so, I was going to ask you about that. When is that one coming up?
On March 6th, I'm doing a webinar for Anatomy Trains on osteoporosis.
Right, I'm definitely going to join that.
As we get older, we may have scoliosis and osteoporosis. Mm. And that's one of the things I was finding as I was working either with clients or with the instructors that consult with me over and over again. You know, it's like, okay, we got to talk about both of these things, because there's things we have to be careful with.
Yes, absolutely. And great. So I will find that link as well. I will put it into the description.
It'll be fun. It'll be fun. Mm-hmm.
Brilliant.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Meredith. Thank you. That was amazing. Fantastic. Lots of love coming in here as well. Thanks.
I hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you did, I would be super grateful if you could leave me a 5-star rating and review, which will help me to create lots more amazing content. If you have any questions or suggestions, reach out to me on Instagram at yogaberry.scoliosis or visit my website at www.yogaberry.net.